This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Later this hour, we're going to hear from a cyclist who's part of a 150-mile bike ride across Illinois from Thompson along the Mississippi River over to Chicago and the shores of Lake Michigan, pulled over to talk with us about this feat of distance and endurance. This person is also the host of a podcast on our partner station, WNIJ, called Under Rocks. We'll hear more about that and the bike ride coming up later this hour. But now, these are going to be the best years of your life. It's a phrase you've maybe heard or even said to a young person on the verge of adulthood. In our society, there's a lot of pressure for those years in a person's 20s or 30s to be the most important years when people come into their identities, their life's career path, and their most important relationships. But as the COVID-19 pandemic has shown, life's timetable isn't always linear, especially in a society where systemic racism and economic inequality make it so things like dream jobs or a dream house are often out of reach. And as our next guest writes, there's no such thing as perfection or a quote-unquote best life. Rainsford Stauffer is a journalist who's written and reported for The New York Times, The Cut, and Teen Vogue, among other outlets. She has a book called An Ordinary Age, Finding Your Way in a World That Expects Exceptional. We spoke with her on the show back in April, just before the book was released. Because this conversation was taped ahead of time, we're not taking calls for this segment, but we'd always love to hear what you thought about what we talked about on the show. talk@21stshow.org is our email address. That's talk@21stshow.org. Or you can always leave us a voicemail. 217-300-2121 is the number there. 217-300-2121. We may just play your message on air. Okay, here's my conversation with Rainsford Stauffer. So, Rainsford, when you talk about the pressures to be exceptional in your book, what are some of those pressures that are unique to young adulthood?
I think the pressures kind of run the gamut. And what's important to note is that while some of these pressures manifest in young adulthood, because it's such a pivotal time full of so many formative things where we're supposed to be moving out and getting dream jobs and finding the right circle of friends, I do think it's important to point out that in a lot of cases, these pressures are so damaging because they manifest in young adulthood and stay with us kind of throughout our lifespan. Young adults have grown up hearing that we need to follow kind of a social script. You do these things in this order, you do them the right way, and life will turn out okay. And what we're increasingly seeing is that's not necessarily true. We know that sociological markers of adulthood, including getting married and having children and finishing school or even moving out of your parents' house, have radically changed over the last 50 years. And so you've got kind of the societal systemic changes that young adults are grappling with, including things like increasing student debt, increasing cost of living with stagnant wages. And then you've got this insidious pressure that all of this should fall back on you, that if you were just a little better, or a little smarter, or had started a little earlier, life would turn out dramatically different. And I think that that's something that young adults are seeing play out as they try to make these really pivotal life choices.
And you write about your own decision, your own sort of experience with this pressure, this timetable in life. You made the decision to leave college to work and take a break from school. Can you talk about your own journey with these expectations and why you thought you needed to get off that path?
Absolutely. I had been working since I was 15 years old. And so by the time I got to college, I think what threw me initially was the idea that in some ways it felt like my higher education was just not compatible with my work life. And I've always been in a position where I needed to work, including when I was a student. So I made the decision to step back from school, continue working, figure out kind of the best path forward. And to be honest with you, at the time, I felt like a complete failure. I rushed to go to college right when I turned 18 years old. I wanted to stick to the traditional timeline. It just so happened that my life didn't work out that way. And I spent 2 years out of school working, figuring out what I wanted to do, being able to support myself. And when I went back to school, I did so in an online program that was online before we all began virtual learning, and actually was a full-time student while working a full-time job. and it was challenging. It certainly wasn't the college experience that were marketed. But I think what's important to note is that lots of people's experiences don't conform with the quote unquote right way of doing things. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they won't work for you personally or that they're invalid.
Yeah, I mean, a struggle, I imagine, in the obvious sense of time management, right, and money management and everything else. But also, I gather there's a bit of maybe shame that you had felt like you had to deal with. Can you talk about that aspect of it?
Oh, my goodness, so much shame. As I mentioned, I felt like a failure. And I think on the surface, people didn't really know what was wrong. At the time, I was depressed and had no language to explain the depression. I felt like I was having to choose between being a good student and supporting myself enough to stay in school. And the whole time, I've, you know, left college, I'm working, I feel like I'm finally kind of getting back into my groove and getting my life back. And people are saying, well, aren't you worried about falling behind? Aren't you worried that you're never going to have the traditional college experience? Don't you think you'll regret it? And frankly, even now, several years out of school and having completed my degree, I still get asked all the time whether I missed out on traditional college. And it just underscores again and again how there really is no traditional college student anymore. We know that a whole host of students are over the age of 25. We know lots of them are parenting. Lots of them are working while they're in school. And I'd go so far as to say there's no traditional right model of young adulthood anymore. I think everything has changed so dramatically that it only makes sense that a lot of our personal circumstances would change with it.
Yeah, I think it's probably vastly underreported that the college completion rate is not what people might assume it is based on the college, what do you want to call it, going to, people who go to college, many more of them don't finish, at least in the, you know, traditional 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. than people might understand. Do you think, is it your sense, or maybe you have evidence, that people born in the 80s and 90s are facing sort of a greater sense of pressure than previous generations when it comes to the perfect job, the, you know, perfect GPA, the perfect department, and so on?
That's a good question. I don't know about greater because I hesitate to quantify that. And I think that a lot of the systems that are working against young people are also working against much older people. But what I have found in the scope of my reporting is that we want young people to emerge into adulthood. We want them to meet these markers of what we traditionally align with a successful young adult. With less and less resources to do so. We're more interested in individual solutions to problems, like it's your fault if you don't have a job that pays you well. It's your fault if you can't find affordable housing, instead of looking at how the context in which someone is growing up and building their life really might impact their choices. And I think it ties right into a trope I hear a lot that definitely came up in the context of the book about, well, young people are too sensitive and they want to be special and they want all these gold stars or participation trophies. And I think what we're right. missing a little bit in that scope of conversation is that this pressure to be extraordinary and to be perfect isn't because young adults are afraid of failing. In a lot of cases, it's because society is not set up to let anyone make a mistake or fail. And so what happens is we think, well, if I can be extraordinary, if I can be the best person I can be, if I can live my best life, I'll be secure and I'll be stable. And those are the things that young adults kept pointing to wanting in the context of their own lives.
Yeah. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st. We're speaking with Rainsford Stauffer, who's the author of An Ordinary Age, Finding Your Way in a World That Expects Exceptional. And so, yeah, you were just talking about, you know, this idea of the quote unquote dream life or best life, where you have a dream job and that great apartment, that, you know, life partner. It's all presented perfectly on Instagram, of course, that, you know, mm-hmm. that is a myth. That's unattainable, because to have those things, there's a certain amount of privilege that's required to come with mm-hmm. that. Can you talk about acknowledging that in your reporting?
I think that that had to be kind of the center of the reporting and definitely was the center point of so many conversations I had. I was very grateful to, in this book, get to talk to people in their 20s from all different locations and backgrounds and who were all differently impacted by their circumstances. And I actually think that's a really big myth that we have to drop when we start talking about young adulthood or millennials or Gen Z or whatever stand-in we want to use for that. Young people are deeply impacted by systemic issues, racism, capitalism, lack of healthcare and affordable education and housing. I think there's this myth that because young people are in fact young and they're still in the process in a lot of instances of building their lives, that they aren't impacted by their societal context or by policy or by things that are happening in the world. And what we know is that one of the reasons that structural dispossession, you know, dispossessing people from basic needs, manifests so deeply in young adulthood is absolutely because it's a time where we're supposed to be making all of these choices about how we want to live. So all of a sudden, young people are seeing these systemic issues really manifest in their own lives in ways that impact what their options are, what opportunities they get, what they feel is possible, and what they feel the expectations are.
You know, and as we talk about, certainly there's a financial milieu, right, into which this generation came out. A lot of them started looking for work amid the Great Recession. And there's this idea that's also come up in the last decade or so of, and maybe it's not an old idea, but the way we talk about it now is this side hustle, right? You have to have your side hustle, your business you're working on, that Instagram shop, that YouTube channel, whatever it is. But as you write, this is not necessarily going to be a safety net for people or allow them to rest on their accomplishments later.
Oh, absolutely. Side hustles were something that I heard a lot about while I was reporting. And I think that it's become normalized in a way that's really problematic, again, because of this fixation on hyper-individualism. You know, at one point, we were told, get an education, get good grades while you're pursuing that education, graduate and get a job. And I think most of us can safely say that that probably doesn't feel accurate or even possible at this point. But then at some point, the expectations started increasing, where really it's not enough to have one job, you should be working two. And in any spare time, you could be making money with this hobby you picked up or this thing you happen to be good at. And suddenly, every part of your identity is monetized or serving some bigger aim that's supposed to get you further down the road. And I think that this is one more kind of last ditch effort for people to reach for some semblance of security. And I think that commodifying parts of your identity or your talents is a really big factor within that.
Wow, every part of your identity is monetized. Maybe that's a whole separate book about the age we live in and social media and all that. Can you also talk about this idea, and this maybe harkens back to something we were mentioning earlier, is the obsession with youth in the U.S., right? 30 under 30 lists are something that I also personally always kind of grated on me, and maybe I'd feel differently if I were one of the 30 people out of the millions of people in America who is chosen for one of these lists. But I mean, do you see pressure from that sort of U.S. obsession with youth?
Absolutely. I think that we live in a profoundly ageist society. And I think that this past year has just been such a stark example of how deeply ageist we are and how willing we are to dismiss people the older they get and the further they get into their lifespan. And the funny thing about that I think we don't talk about enough is that this fixation on youth is certainly harmful to older people, but it's also not that great for young people. I think that 30 under 30 lists are great examples, but I also think that just the timeline of young adulthood and this emphasis on you can't be behind, why are you the one that's lagging behind and doesn't have it all together yet? I think that amount of pressure does not match with what we know the transition to young adulthood looks like now. And so I think that it becomes this fixation of every formative moment or every big experience or every accomplishment or any financial stability has to happen within this one very narrow decade of life. And not only is it just not possible, it doesn't feel very good. It's not particularly aspirational to look at your life and think, well, it's going to be good for the next 5 years and then it's downhill from there. I think that when we think about aging, we should be looking at how we can help people have fulfilled and stable lives across their lifespan and not prioritize this one period of youth to the extent that we do.
Okay, so in that vein, helping people to have fulfilled lives throughout their lifespan is this idea of embracing ordinary. What are some examples in your book where young people rejected perfection and embrace, you know, ordinariness?
I think what was astounding to me about the reporting is how much this spanned different parts of life. You know, I talked to people who had PTSD from abuse they experienced in really toxic work environments. And for them, embracing quote unquote ordinariness meant stepping off that track and trying to go into a different line of work that maybe wasn't as prestigious, maybe it didn't connect to a college major, but it allowed them to be secure and personally fulfilled and take care of their mental health. Other people pointed to the fact that acknowledging that they're lonely, which we know is a huge issue for young adults right now, pointing out that they're lonely, that they don't want to go it alone, and that they need community or they want roots and a sense of home. To them, that was embracing ordinariness because it kind of took this trope of young people are independent and you can do it all on your own and go it alone, and sort of turned it on its head. And it takes a lot of guts to admit, I'm lonely, maybe I'm not doing well. I talked to people who had renegotiated their college careers and had, instead of, you know, pursuing a traditional four-year degree, decided to take time off of work, or they decided to pursue community college in order to stay rooted in their community and take a job. I think that it looks a little different on everybody, and that's exactly what's so powerful about it. I think at the heart of it, embracing ordinariness instead of perfection in your own life requires you to look inward and kind of renegotiate with yourself what your values are, what your priorities are, and trying to move from there.
I think that is a great place to end the conversation, sort of a brief commencement address to the class of 2021, we'll call it. If you want more of what we've been talking about in this conversation, Rainsford Stauffer's book is called An Ordinary Age, Finding Your Way in a World That Expects Exceptional. Rainsford, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up after a short break, a conversation with Dan Libman. He's an English professor at Northern Illinois University, an author, and the host of the Under Rocks podcast from our partner station WNIJ. He's currently also on a 150-mile bike ride across Illinois from the banks of the Mississippi River to the shores of Lake Michigan. We checked in with him earlier this morning on how that ride is going, what he and his Peloton are seeing out there in Illinois. We're going to hear that conversation after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.